Good for the meeting. I have several requests to speak. The first is from Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. President. I would like this on the public record of the meeting. When I read the article, suit seeks halt to desal test drilling.
You might
Oh.
There you go.
Thanks, Mike. I always like conversations with Mike. When I read the article, suit seeks halt to desal test drilling in the Cambrian last week, as you probably know, I was stirred by the comments made by the president of the CCSD board, Mr. Sanders, and a poem sprang up. Mr. Sanders said, and I assume it's quoted accurately, Ms. Hawley is grabbing at straws with half-baked legal theories that have no merit, end quote. Well, as I said, a poem sprang up into my head, and here it is. It's called Mix Those Metaphors. When you set me up as a straw man, I grab a stem of Bermuda grass, put it into the oven, bake it until it's crisp, pull it out carefully, cool it, and stick it into my head. Now I can grasp this theory. The final straw is the one that breaks the camel's back. I grab another stem of Bermuda grass. Where's the camel? That's my poem. The lawsuit reported in that article informs us of how CCSD and the Army Corps of Engineers work behind the scenes. It's worth reading, ratepayers. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. The only response I have is that you used the word informs us, and I would remind everybody that lawsuits begin with allegations. The next person to speak is Catherine Hyde.
Hello, good afternoon. I actually come here today with a question, and I don't usually do that. I don't usually ask a question here because I've seen people have less than stellar results with that. But this is a very specific and very finite question. The comments that I'm making right now, this is my understanding, will pretty much disappear after I make them because the board has decided not to record them in the future as part of the meeting minutes. So here is my very simple question. This is done as a measure to save cost, to save money. How much money? What is the savings to the district?
To do what?
To not include public comments in
I'm sorry.
The minutes.
Well, for openers, before we get to the answer to your question, the decision was made to have action minutes, and the reason we did that is because the videotape is always available, and we keep a library of all of the videos for each of the meetings on hand. So it's really not necessary to put into the written minutes all of the comments that are made during the public comment session. Anybody is free to come to the district, view the video, and see the public comments, listen to the public comments if they want to.
Okay.
Or they can go to AGP video.
So is there an answer to the question of how much money that saves us?
Madam General Manager?
No, I don't have a specific amount. You know, it was part and parcel of the whole
reduction in staff, and the fact that it takes ultimately between 4 and 6 hours to transcribe minutes, and it takes the district clerk or the deputy district clerk, Monique Madrid, away from other duties, and they now have absorbed plenty others since we have 2 less staff.
But you knew at the time you made the decision, right? I mean, you because here's my concern on it. Basically, the comments belong to the Cambria ratepayer. I mean, we are the people who stand up here and make comments. And the money you're saving also belongs to the Cambria ratepayer. So obviously, you've got a little bit of a balancing act. We have something here that costs money.
Which is designed to bring up issues that are not on the agenda. The board is not permitted to take any action. So it would be inconsistent with the whole concept of action minutes to have in the written minutes the expressions of on issues that are brought up during the public comment period.
Okay. I do understand that, and I'm going to try this just one more time. Okay. Is there a dollar figure to how much the district saved by going to action minutes?
Well, we'd have to sit down and quantify it in terms of the staff time saved.
Okay, so essentially what you're saying is that when the decision was made, you actually didn't know how much money you were saving us.
Well, we knew that we were saving
I
staff time,
would.
And that saves
okay.
money.
Okay. All right, then my question is, can we get that answer from you? Will you tell us how much money was saved by going to action minutes, and if so, when and how?
Well, quite frankly, I don't think it's worth the time and effort to do that. We've explained to you that we have all of the public comments in the record captured on the videotape.
And I have mentioned that I understand that.
And if anybody wants to review them, they're welcome to come
in and do so. And yes, you have mentioned that several times, and I've mentioned that I understand that. But a change was made from one kind of minutes that we've had all these years to another kind of minutes.
Yes.
And I just think it's a very simple question. I'm kind of surprised, frankly, that you made the decision not knowing how much money that would save. Yeah. So is it possible for that to be presented
other
to the
board
public?
Members yeah. would like to weigh in?
Just a comment that you recognize that there was 2 people laid off from the administrative staff.
I do.
And there was a myriad of benchmarks that were things that couldn't be done. So for you to say how much specifically would the minutes be if they were totally recorded? 4 to 5 hours to transcribe, but in general, you're looking at, I don't know, general manager, 10 different items that would have to be sacrificed in order to remove 2 people from administrative staff. It's not a specific number. I think it'd be very difficult to give you a specific number. But recognize the overall result is 2 significant employees removed from administrative staff, and that was a major cut in staff.
Director D'Amico.
I think even my experience over the last 2 years now, and even before that, trying to read minutes and understand what went on in the meeting was never related to that. The minutes, and you did use the word transcribed. This is not the transcribed record of a discussion as it would be maybe in a court situation. And what I find when I read minutes that were produced as best they could, because they are, unless you get 40 pages, which, you know, 20, 30 pages to truly transcribe a meeting, you don't get the true feeling of what was said. I mean, Elizabeth has a presentation. How do you transcribe, how do you relate something like that to the public by in minutes? Her body language, her presentation, the words she used, which, you know, is well taken from her perspective. So the idea that we're actually recording this and it's fully available to the public means that they can truly see the input from the public, the response from the board that is made, and also the issues that are action items, which are legally required that we do, and we can't take action on things that we just generally discuss. I mean, even if we had 100% agreement with someone in the audience that brings up a comment, there's no action taken because it's not a scheduled item of work here today. So if that's the one issue. So the minutes, I don't understand, personally, I don't understand the issue of what those minutes would give to somebody. If you could go look at the last ones you say, seven people got up and said something about the desal plant. That's what the level of minutes can be. Some we can put pro, con. But the transcription, which is the recorded message, is very important to see. And the other issue, that's where I would have had no objection if we didn't have minutes other than what we need legally, you know, 2 years ago, because I don't see the meat and potatoes of it, so to speak, for my decision making when I was on the other side of the table, so to speak. The other issue is that I've been in management for 20, 30 years where I've had to make decisions, and our general manager had to make. She had a restriction on her budget capabilities. Two people were going to be let go, disappointingly good people, hardworking people, but if you can't afford something, it's got to be done. And I mentioned that at the NCAC meeting last night. So the general manager made the decisions of what is, first of all, legalities of required reporting that has to be done. Payrolls have to be put together. Responses to court actions by individuals in the community and outside the community. So what is the low-hanging fruit, if you will? The idea is if you look at the number of people you have and you'd lose, I guess it was, 20%, 30%? 30% of the workforce, you have to let stuff go, and that's how it's made. Nobody, you don't sit down and say this was $6.80, this was $400, oh, maybe we should stop doing the taxes as well as we do, or tell the accountant not to come in. I mean, okay. This is a management decision,
and
I believe it's right.
My question was simply, is it possible to get a dollar figure or not? And really, no would have sufficed. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Next request to speak is from Harry Farmer.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, ladies. My name is Harry Farmer, 23, a resident of Cambria, and I'm the author of the Viewpoint article in today's Cambrian. I haven't picked up the Cambrian yet, so I haven't looked at it. I mean, I wrote it, but I haven't looked to make sure it's there in total form and that it wasn't edited. I don't know if any of you have had the opportunity to read it yet. Okay, well, you will at some point. So before I continue, by the way, I want to make reference to the fact that, you know, I reflected on the content of the article, and I probably could have expressed myself in maybe a less critical, more positive fashion that would have been more productive for the community and for the board and for myself. But I want to state that I made some very valid and thoughtful comments, some accurate observations and criticisms that should be food for thought for anybody that reads the article. And so let me move on. One more thing I wanted to say. If you've read it, you'll see that I made a number of quotes that Chairman Sanders made at the last board meeting. And so if there's one regret that I have also is that I gave him way too much free publicity, but that's neither here nor there. So first off, regarding last month's meeting, I'd like to thank Director McKinnon for his remarks at the meeting where you stated that you've met with members of the community, you find that folks are very concerned about DCEL, and that the board needs to be more transparent and more forthcoming regarding informing the public about the DCEL project. So I think that took some thoughtfulness and I think a certain amount of courage to some degree to come forward as you did. So I think I speak for many folks in the community when I say we appreciate your honesty. I have this on here. Is that
please,
correct?
Please don't interrupt the speaker.
All right. Thank you.
Please don't interrupt the speaker. Thank you.
All right. Okay. All right. There we go. I didn't do anything, but it is louder now, and I didn't even touch it. Okay. So I'll just move on. And I've kind of lost my place here. So anyway, I was addressing the fact that you were referring to the fact that the board needs to be more transparent regarding the desalination project. But I also wish to say, and I appreciate your honesty here, but I also wish to state that members of our community have stood at this podium for months, if not years, even advocating for more openness and accountability from the board regarding the DCEL project. And for the most part, we folks, we members of the community that have been here at the podium, have been dismissed or ignored and described as a very small but vocal minority of the community. who don't represent the majority of Cambrians, but I believe that you'll discover now, as time goes by, that a large segment of the community is very concerned about the desal project and how it's been handled, or might I say mishandled, by the board and the district. Also, Chairman Sanders, I want to thank you for finally addressing the need for more public comment, more public involvement in this issue, where facts are given so both the citizenry and the board can become more knowledgeable. I realize that the wheels of bureaucracy at times do move very slowly, so they often take time to recognize the obvious. So I think we all appreciate the fact that change is finally taking place here. But I would hope you would also acknowledge that that what you've stated has been recommended and advocated by others, including myself, for many months, even years now, without even being commented upon or being apparently given any consideration by the board. Also, you stated that the board should take, and once again I'm quoting you now, the extra step in pursuing more community participation. It would seem to me that having the citizens of Cambria involved in this process, being given all the information regarding the fiscal and environmental impacts of the project, having the opportunity to ask questions and address concerns in a large public forum, which would be a natural part of the democratic decision-making process, not just an extra step. By the way, I also want to mention, as an aside, that back on March 16th of this year, a public forum did take place where experts on desal and other water alternatives spoke before a standing room only audience on a Tuesday evening at Rabobank. One of the organizers was Valerie Benz. She's in the audience today, and she's currently running for the CCSD Board of Directors. A thorough discussion with audience participation took place. Directors Chaldicott and McKinnon were in attendance. Yet this example of community involvement and public concern about the most important issue in our community that directly relates to the function of the CCSD was barely, if even ever, acknowledged by this board. So if you don't mind, let me return to the decision-making process. This is what I hear from people that I talk with in the community. What should follow after the public has had the opportunity to become more informed on the issue would be to put the desalination project to a vote of the people. Let the citizens of Cambria decide at the ballot box. Let them cast the vote right here in this building on whether Cambria should pursue desal or not. You know, I would also suggest that until this entire part of the democratic process occurs, that nothing go forward on this project, including the drilling of test wells in front of Shamwell Park, scheduled to begin in September. Let me add that if the board and the district are truly sincere and dedicated to serving the needs of this community, that all options available to address our water concerns, including the more cost-efficient and environmentally friendly ones, such as gray water systems and cisterns, should be strongly promoted by everyone I see seated in front of me. Promoting desal as the best option, as is currently the policy of the board, to the almost total exclusion of time-tested, well-proven, yet forward-looking, relatively simple technologies I've just mentioned, has done a real disservice to this community. And while I don't have this written down here, I want to make this statement. The Army Corps of Engineers is scheduled to begin test well drilling on September 1st. In a definitive five-part series done by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Michael Grunewald, in his definitive five-part series on the Army Corps of Engineers that he wrote for the Washington Post, his conclusions were that though occasionally the Army Corps does a creditable job, his conclusion is that what the Army Corps of Engineers is most well known for is cooking the books, coming in over budget, over time, and doing real, irreparable, and at times permanent damage to the natural environment. And the fact that I, as a concerned citizen, can find out this information, and the board, who has already handed off this entire project to the Army Corps of Engineers, has me a bit distressed, and I think it should have you gentlemen distressed as well. As concerned citizens and members of this community and members of the Board of Directors.
Can you wrap it up, Mr. Farmer?
I can. I just wish to mention that I am currently running for the CCSD board myself, and if anyone out there in the audience that's watching this on C-SPAN or listening to it at their website, and I want to thank the people of C-SPAN, of SlowSPAN, for allowing these presentations to be visible on television and on their website. If anyone's interested in participating and assisting in my campaign, they can give me a phone call at 927.
Mr. Farmer, this is a meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors. It is not a campaign forum. Henceforth, the chair is not going to entertain any comments about campaigning. We're not here to campaign.
Okay,
we're here to talk about district business.
I seem to recall that Marshall Hilsky came up here a few months ago when he was running for County Board of Supervisors, and he stood here for 3 minutes stating
You've been up here for about 7 or 8 minutes.
The point is we've
given you plenty of time. Please conclude your remarks.
All I'm going to say is, he stood here for 3 minutes and talked about his...
Please conclude your remarks.
I am concluding my remarks. All I'm saying is, if you're saying that I had 7 minutes and I'm taking 30 seconds to mention that I'm a candidate, he took 3 minutes to describe his candidacy. I don't think there's any comparison. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your comments.
Mr. Farmer, could I ask you a question?
Sure.
Would it be fair to say that you are promoting environmental alternatives to diesel?
That's what I would hope for,
sir. Will you ever flesh those out?
Will I ever flesh those out?
Yes.
Absolutely. In fact, I intend to include them on my website.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Terrific. Thank you. The next request to speak is from Valerie Bentz.
Gentlemen and friends and citizens in the audience, thank you for your time and attention. The main point I wish to make today is my regret that some of the actions of the gentleman on the current board have, I think, inhibited and possibly can curtail in the future the voice of the citizens and the ratepayers. The first one of those actions that I think curtail the voice is, even though it sounds reasonable, not having these public comments put into the record. And I realize the difficulty with the staff. However, many people don't have access to the video. Some of the most thorough researchers who research governmental processes, they look for the documents. And so if our voices are not even mentioned and our names aren't even mentioned in the documents, they're lost. They're gone. Another indication of this is if all you record are the actions of the board and not any of the discussion, even the discussion between the members of the board, it would be like the Supreme Court only recording their decisions and never recording dissenting opinions. To me, those are marks not of openness to the community, but of trying to protect the privileged status of the directors and their positions, especially the majority of the directors. A third action that I find really dismaying is the idea that the committees of your board would be ad hoc and therefore not open to the public. It seems like there are some committees, and not being on the board, I'm not privy to know that much about it. There's got to be committees that look deeply into the budget, that discuss things that are coming up, things of importance, on a regular basis. And I don't believe that these should be ad hoc committees. I think it's necessary that all of the actions and deliberations be open to all of us. A third move that I think is really detrimental to the community participation was the turning over of the voice of the citizens and, in effect, the franchise to the Army Corps of Engineers by making the decision that it's not our project, it's their project. But really, it is our project. It's our community. The Army Corps may come in and they may wreck our beach and they'll go and we'll pay the price. And that's intolerable, gentlemen. Absolutely intolerable and unconscionable. The fourth thing is that some of the funds are used for purposes that the community have no voice in whatsoever, such as the huge amounts of money spent on lobbyists who lobby for causes that we never have a voice to agree that we want them to lobby for. So, for example, $74,000 to a lobbying firm for a cause that many of us may not agree with. Okay, I got that off my chest. Now I would really like to thank you, board members, especially Mr. McKinnon and Mr. D'Amico and others, maybe. I wasn't privy to the deliberations, but I think it must have been very hard to make the budget cuts that you made. And a difficult process, and you did it, and the boards haven't been able to do that before, and I really applaud you for that. And things like having the staff pay their portion of retirement funds, those are moves that should have been made before, and you finally made them. And I really applaud you for that, because I know it's a very difficult job. Thank you. Oh, one more thing. This is a very good book by John McPhee called The Control of Nature. And if you want to know more of the history of Army Corps of Engineer projects, there's a philosophy club in town I belong to, and we're currently reading this book. And it's really very deep and very good. So I recommend it to you. Read it before you go to bed. You may not be able to sleep, but it's good reading. Thank you very much.
Ms. Benz, could I just correct something? You said that two directors are responsible for reducing the staff. We don't do it that way. It's a decision of the whole board, and I think you should realize that.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I meant the whole board did make the decision, and I applaud you all for that. I just kind of thought maybe some of the newer members may have had more to do with it, but I apologize. It was the whole board that made that really difficult decision.
In the same way, committees don't make decisions either. It's made by the whole board in public.
I'm glad to hear it. I just would like to know more about the deliberations inside. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. The next request to speak is from Mr. Figler.
Yes, Steve Figler. I've lived here since 2000, owned property here since 98. I was a commissioner on PROS for four of those years. And I recall at that time there was a lawsuit brought based on a violation of the Brown Act. And it was a big concern for the board and to some extent for PROS at the time, because we really didn't know where we stood. Well, were we subject to the Brown Act or not? So Tammy Raddick came in, and she gave us a presentation about how the Brown Act applied, and that, in fact, because we were a standing committee, that our work was subject to the Brown Act. For those who don't know, the Brown Act has everything to do with public access to the deliberations of committees that are standing in nature as opposed to ad hoc. And I learned a great deal from that. And So I was extremely shocked, really, that the proposal was put forth, and I believe acted on, that the several committees were going to become ad hoc, a decision that this board made. And one of those committees, I'll just focus on one, is the Finance Committee. I downloaded from state documents the relevant section dealing with the Brown Act and what's an ad hoc committee and what's a standing committee. And I don't see any way on this green earth that the Finance Committee, which you are making or have made ad hoc, can be considered an ad hoc committee, which by definition exists for a single, to solve a single problem, and then is disbanded within a timely manner, and is not reconstitutable. Once that problem is solved, the ad hoc committee is supposed to disappear. Is that how you want your finance committee? Is that how we want our finance committee to operate?
Is that your question?
Yeah.
Mr. Figler?
I have one other short comment.
Okay.
But if you have an answer to that.
Can you make your comment, and then we'll respond
okay.
to your question?
There's a tradition in our nation of keeping written records of things. And I, as a citizen of our nation and our town, I am outraged that this board, in order to save a few dollars, would take away that written record that is, in essence, as I say, a violation of a tradition in this nation, and is also the basis upon which legal actions are made or not made. Can I get your comment?
Well, I'm going to respond to your second question first. When you said that the written record is the basis upon which legal action is made or not made, to quote you, you're into a territory that I'm very familiar with. And as we've said repeatedly today, the videotape is available. It is a part of the record. And if there is a lawsuit, that videotape becomes a part of the record, is a part of the record. The proponent of the lawsuit can have the videotape transcribed, or in some courts, the videotape itself can be submitted as evidence.
Well, why do we need the...
Let me finish, please. There is absolutely no attempt here to hide anything from the record. Mm-hmm. Quite the contrary, by preserving the tapes, we're preserving the actual film footage, the voice, the mannerisms of the delivery of the comments, and the comments themselves for posterity. And for anybody who wants mm-hmm. to come in and review them, for any kind of litigation that might ensue, mm-hmm. it is actually a better record than a written summary of what the person says.
Then I guess our nation can do away with the congressional record.
The nation is going, well, first of all, this is not the United States Congress. Secondly, the nation is going to more and more toward a paperless society, and the preservation of the videotape is a legal mechanism to preserve the record, and that's exactly what we're doing. We are not distorting the record. We're preserving the record, and quite frankly, I just don't see where the issue is. It's a non-issue.
For you. Okay. And my first comment about ad hoc committees?
As was explained before, at the meeting at which the committees were deemed to be ad hoc, the Finance Committee, for example, the committee that you mentioned in particular, does not meet on a regular basis. It meets only occasionally and as needed. It meets sometimes when there are budget issues, other times when there are budget issues, it doesn't meet.
Okay.
It is not a regular standing committee.
Okay, so the bottom line on this is that because you have made it ad hoc, the public now does not get prior notice or get an agenda. So you can make your decisions without our input.
The decisions are made by the board, not by the committees. Thank you for your comment. The last request to speak is from Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders, board.
You bet.
First thing I'd like to say is I think some of the comments that I've heard today share one thing in common, which is a certain level of distress at the low priority that openness is taking with this board. This board has a lot of issues to consider, and there is some concern still in that area, and you have to try and keep as open and transparent as possible so that you can build on the trust. I would hope this board would consider some of those policies, like how long are you going to keep the tapes? Are you going to keep them in perpetuity? And what policies do you have in place for retention of emails? And what kind of policies do you have in place when somebody would like to have a record that's electronic so they don't have to have paper? If we're all going toward a paperless society, we should definitely be able to have a procedure in place to request public records as electronic documents, which is an entirely different beast from making copies. It has been 8 years, 8 months, and 8 days since the moratorium was declared. The state law allows water agencies to declare a water shortage emergency whenever it determines that the ordinary demands of consumers would deplete the water supply to the extent that there would be insufficient water for human consumption, sanitation, and fire protection. I'd like to get an update at some point on how the fire hydrant maintenance program is going. This is an issue that I raised in January, February of this year regarding some of the neglected hydrants that are hidden or not marked with a blue reflector. If you wouldn't mind bringing that back at some point, see how that program's going, I'd appreciate it. Two other quick things. I would like to formally request this board review and reconsider the need for an appropriateness of the Water Code Section 350 emergency declaration at a public hearing. I also would really like to have the board consider revising the water demand within the Water Master Plan, and will help decide the size of if a desal plant is appropriate for that location. It would set the size for that, especially in light of the fact of the governor's 20% by 2020, which is asking for a reduction of all California water use to go down by 20%. This community already conserves a lot and is pretty efficient, and there's, depending on where you are, you don't necessarily have to cut 20% exactly, but adding to it what you think that the demand should be is not necessarily a policy that should go forward in light of the state's actions. And I'd just like to wrap up by quoting a pretty smart guy called Einstein. Any intelligent fool can make things bigger, more complex, and more violent. It takes a touch of genius and a lot of courage to move in the opposite direction. And I would really like to see this board continue to make some of these difficult leadership decisions. I was very glad to get that water quality report, single, black and white, one sheet of paper in my bill instead of the four-color thing was nice to have. It was pretty. And it had the information, and it was easy to read. I'm glad to see that there are decisions being made to cut some of the things that are not necessarily, they're bells and whistles as opposed to necessities. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I have no more requests to speak for the first public comment period, so we'll move on to item number 3, which is a review of the agenda. Are there any additions, deletions to the agenda or consent calendar items to be pulled? Board members? Director McKinnon.
B on 7.
7B will be pulled. Okay. Any others? If not, the agenda stands as published, and when we get to the consent agenda, we will pull item 7B for separate consideration. That takes us to item number 5, special reports. Is there a representative from the Sheriff's Office here today? Yes, there is. I couldn't see you. Sorry. You were sitting right behind the podium there.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I don't have anything controversial that I'm aware of. I just have some info. We responded to 90 calls for service in the Cambria area between July 1st and yesterday. That resulted in 3 reports for burglary or theft, 1 vandalism, 1 assault, 1 drug violation, and perhaps it's the controversy, but 13 disturbance of the peace calls in the past 3 weeks in Cambria, and 1 call for a welfare and institutions issue, mental health issue. Beyond that, I have nothing specific to report. I haven't noticed any trends or any growing trends in the area recently. And that's about all I have for you today, unless you have something for me.
Questions? Director D'Amico.
I'd just like to maybe give my theory on the issue of the number of disturbing the peace. I was at an NCAC meeting last night as our representative there, and the county reported that they'll be issuing new regulations on the vacation rental houses. And the key issue about maintaining, one of the key issues of maintaining your vacation rental permit will be that you don't have any violations. There's going to be a whole process that you could lose it. And one of the things they put in there was a record of your disturbance of the peace records, because apparently there's no way other than disturbance of the peace under the county laws, which you can actually then, that somebody, an agency like the sheriff or one of the other enforcement agencies can say something. Because if you get into the noise ordinance, you have to have the equipment, it has to be happening at the time, the decibel levels, which is kind of onerous and not going to be any real function.
Not going to happen.
So the disturbance of the peace issue will become an issue for people with vacation rental, and I think that it may be the two go in hand, because there was about 30 people at the meeting last night.
Most of these were music.
Yeah.
Loud music late at night?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay.
Some of them were just neighborhood disturbances, and since we typically, when we respond, if there's really nothing going on at the time, there's no report taken, so I don't have any other details besides that. It's just listed as a neighborhood disturbance.
And it's very valid. I'm not arguing one way or the other. It's just that it's the way in which we can create a community that everybody feels comfortable living in, and the only way to get to, until it gets promulgated, when, and I think the promulgation issue is seen pretty well, is pretty good, is that once it gets promulgated and that type of notice of potential disturbance of the peace, and if it's posted with the people who actually do the renting and the managing, and it's in the agreement when people sign to rent the house, they'll all be noticed that something like this is possible for them. So I think it will help, I think.
In this meeting, did they mention who was going to maintain this type of record? Because although we have it on the log, it won't show us that it's a vacation.
That was rental. A question that was asked. I raised that, is who keeps the records of where this is? And I don't know that they have fully. It's like passing a law, and then somebody's got to figure out how to promulgate it. So I think we're at this point where they're trying to get the regulation together, and then the means of enforcement and record-keeping, as you point out, has got to be worked out between agencies.
So that the county, separate and apart from the Sheriff's Department, can track the number of complaints that come.
Somebody, yes, and I think it would be through the enforcement, the code enforcement issue.
Sure.
But that's conjecture on my part until they really get it all enforced.
relative to record keeping. Also, typically if we get sent to a disturbance of the peace, that's music or something like that, and we go there and we contact the subject and they agree that they're going to turn the music down or stop the party or whatever it is, there's no documentation made. There's no crime. A disturbance of the peace is not a crime unless there is a victim, and that victim would have to be someone who has been disturbed and is willing to file a complaint. So, again, as far as record keeping goes, it could lead to a lot of people filing complaints, but as far as keeping records, that would be the only way to do it.
If I may, I mean, I bring it up for the even discussion is because you're with the sheriff's office, and I find I'm been working the last 4 years with several of the cities in California, and it's amazing to me that one agency will enact something, which I guess it's like our unfunded mandates from the federal government, which then falls on the next office, which here may be the sheriff's department. And, you know, there's got to be some reality to the issue of how many sheriff's offices are available, and are we going to make them become the recorder of noise complaints while somebody's burglarizing a house four blocks away? That's my concern.
Well, there will be a record, however. Like, I have one of the
13.
That we responded to, no reports were taken. However, there is a record that we responded to those. So I imagine there's a process, whoever ends up compiling these statistics, where they could access through our department, how many times have you responded to Cambria for a noise complaint, and are they vacation rentals?
But a record with the address.
Right.
It does show the address. Well, it will show the address of who called on most of them, because a lot of them are anonymous. People will call and say, loud music across the street, I don't want anybody contacting me. We'll go across the street, and either it's already resolved or we'll resolve it, but it won't necessarily have the offending party's address on it.
But as you heard, maybe if you were in the audience, our issue of just the staff time necessary for public, for keeping these records and moving records from one agency to another become very cumbersome.
Oh, yes.
And it's, you know, maybe I'm talking about things that are probably more encompassing, but the fact is you put a rule like that, now you've got the sheriff department sending staff out, which is fine, but then they have to keep probably a better record than you may have been doing. Then you have to get them together, collate them with the county. The county has to assign somebody to keep all this stuff. I mean, we are creating this.
I suggest we all focus on county planning.
Exactly, right. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Sheriff, while we're on the subject, what are the hours at which you don't allow disturbing the peace? Is it like 10 to 7 or something? Or?
There are no specific hours. No. It's hopefully based on reasonableness.
Common sense.
We get noise complaints in the middle of the afternoon, loud music. Somebody's working on their car and they've got their radio on. Typically, there's no enforcement action you can take there. You can ask them to turn down, and generally most people will. If they realize they're bothering a neighbor, they'll turn it down. Sometimes you run into those who don't care, and since you really have no enforcement power in that area, it'll continue until it stops sometimes. Later in the evening, it's a lot easier. I think the county does have an ordinance that vaguely at least defines the times, kind of like quiet times at a campground, but there's no specific time for it. It depends on what the noise is, how loud it is, how many people's disturbing. And in the afternoon, just like in the evening, if someone calls about a loud a disturbance and they do want to make a complaint, then the time is irrelevant. We can take action at any time during the day.
Terrific. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. With that, we will move to item number 6, which is managers and board reports, and we will begin with the general manager's report.
All right. Thank you. I just remind everyone that the next board meeting is a week earlier, next month's meeting. It's on August 19th. It's the third Thursday at 12:30. And that was the schedule that the board approved, and that's working around the Pine Dorado events. So August 19th, the third Thursday at 12:30 here at Vets Hall. I attach Van Skoyek's June monthly report. I do want to add that they weren't involved, but we, President Greg Sanders and I, attended a project progress meeting this past Monday in Los Angeles with the Army Corps project team. And they're just coordinating the rights of entry for Shamwell Park Beach and with the county and with the state parks departments. And we are working to get the integral determination report or the IDR report. It is in Washington, D.C., and I've been in communication with folks there and with Greg Burns' office. He's on vacation this week, but with his associate, to ensure that it gets stepped through the process there in D.C., so that's a little bit of an update. It was a good progress meeting. We did get to meet Colonel Mark Toy, who took Colonel Tom Magnus's place, and he's got a lot of energy, and he's really wanting to be part of this project team and could see that there was a good working relationship among us there at the project team meeting. I did put a note here about the Parks and Rec Commission just so that they're not out there being forgotten since they went on a quarterly meeting schedule. Their next meeting is Tuesday, September 7th at 10 a.m. And then two things to add. I did make a note that the Consumer Confidence Report was included in our utility bills this month. It's four pages. It's not two pages. It was two folded pages that were both sides. I have received a few calls about where's the rest of the information and the progress updates. So I just want to let you know that some of your customers and some of the constituents who used to receive the report, because we are only bound to send it out to customers, have already called and inquired where's the project progress updates. And I've just referred them to the website, although I must be quite frank with you, we haven't updated too many or made too many public relations pieces for the website due to staff constraints at the time. So that was done. It is due to go out each and every year, and it was timely. The fire hydrant program is going to be reported by Mark Miller next month in his fire chief report, but it was brought up by one of your public speakers, and I just want to make sure you know that we, the water department, the fire department, and I, we've sat down months ago. We've talked about phasing this project because it's based on affordability, and we are using one of the reservists. He's already completed phase one, which means he walked every hydrant. We debated around those that weren't obviously obstructed with some larger gardening and landscape concerns, okay, because they are. There's many of them within the community. He's put them on a spreadsheet. We've already had them on a spreadsheet, but this is kind of like a check and balance just to make sure that we've got them all identified. He identified those that have maintenance problems so that those could be turned immediately over to the water department, which that has occurred, so that they could be attended to. And then the other things that he looked at were for painting, and then we're going to get into a process of numbering them so that they're identified for numbering purposes. So phase two is we'll sit down and talk about what kind of funds we might have available for him or others to go out and paint the hydrants and number them, and then to work on the larger issue with some of these landscape projects that are around them and how we're going to tackle that. But right now, for what he accomplished in the few days that he was out in the field, we're satisfied with that, and Mark will report on that next month. But I'm just giving you that heads up since it was mentioned today. Moving on to the finance director's report, or finance manager's report, the budget that was approved by the board of directors last month has been posted to the CCSD website. And just for the community's information, I recognize that some of the public speakers again today, the board approved the budget. We have a purchasing policy. We have rules in place with regard to how those monies are spent, and that's the general manager's responsibility. And I appreciate all the efforts that went into and the folks who were involved in making public comments about the budget. But I just want to assure you that, you know, we appreciated all the input, and we follow those policies to a T, and when they're not, we get those things addressed. The budget's available. I think it was the next day Al had it out on the website. We've had numerous Public Records Act requests for certain contracts and things. So those things are always constantly responded to. So I just want to ensure you that when the public makes a request, those things are followed through. Al made mention of a LAFCO expense here. It was significantly different than what we had budgeted. We had budgeted $29,000, and it came in at $19,000. It was about $10,000 less. Don't get too excited, though. We under-budgeted some health insurance, and so we're going to look to see probably a little bit higher of an increase in health insurance that may absorb that. But this was due to the fact that our budget was lower, and the LAFCO expenses are based on budgets, okay, and what the bottom line is. No disbursements in excess of $100,000. Al reports that the LAFE fund as of June 30th was $4,506,918. And he notes this is the first year-to-year increase since the 2002-2003 fiscal year budget. And then he's itemized these. Now, understand the different fund balances within the LAFE fund. This will become more definitive and updated after the end of the year is closed out. There's a couple of last things that come in next month. There's like the final property tax receipt we get next month and one or two other little things. So with that first quarterly report, this will get updated to show what exactly are going to be the reserves, because I know the wastewater reserves are going to be higher than that $27,000. All right, he mentions on page 8 that this is the time period we enter in where life starts going down a bit because, you know, we will get, like I mentioned, the last property tax receipt next month. It's usually, you know, a smaller one, but this is the time that we start, you know, the fire department operates out of the life fund until the next large property tax receipt comes in the December time period. He attaches his copy of the debt service schedule. I did send an email before I left for the meeting today because he's been in contact with a couple of financiers regarding our Series 1999 wastewater bonds and refinancing those. And we've got some pretty interesting details that I sent an email to Alan and Peter to get a meeting going so that we can talk about those. There's some good money-saving opportunities with refinancing those bonds. Moving on to fire, you'll notice that he doesn't have his stats still here. The admin transition impacted fire, and this was a task that typically Corey did. She's no longer in fire. Unfortunately, Corey had a passing in her family, so we've had some challenges even with our layoffs. So you'll see June's and July stats next month, okay? I coordinated with Mark today. They're quite busy. But he does report that the NCORE team did make a rescue of three local area fishermen on June 14th. Everybody was okay. He also mentions a fire on June 16th at the Mustache Pete's restaurant. It was caused, there was some combustible storage, including napkins and matches that got ignited after being stored too close to an open light bulb. There was a water line that was nearby. It burst, and it prevented it from going or spreading any further in the building. So Mark makes a note here that open light bulb fixtures aren't appropriate for closet storage areas, and they do create a considerable fire hazard. And he mentions and recommends fluorescent light bulbs are the fixtures of choices for these areas. So I want to share that comment. And then under prevention, next month, the CCSD Fire Department and CAL FIRE will be, they're partnering this year to educate residents and about subjects with regard to the evacuation plans and the wildland urban interface program, and it's called Ready, Set, Go. And they're going to be on your agenda next month as a presentation at the beginning of the meeting. They're partnering together, and they'll be here to discuss that more in detail. And then the fire hazard fuel reduction program has been completed for this year, and it's an item under the public hearing today. And that's all for the manager's report.
Any questions of the general manager?
I have some.
Yes, Director McKinnon.
Number one, I'd like to make sure that everyone realizes not only do we set policy, but we have the responsibility of critical oversight. And that's many times why some of us will, like, for instance, challenge 7B. But in looking at your report, there's a couple things that bother me. This is the second month in a row where we haven't had water status. Can you respond as to why? After all is said and done, we are a water company, and we don't have any water status.
We had vacations last month, and admittedly, I know it's my responsibility. The water charts go up on the website. They're not in the reports this month because I didn't have the staff member here to prepare that report. Fortunately, our utility manager's recruitment, it's been very difficult dealing and not having to or having to manage without a utilities manager here. So you will see the reports.
I understand that, but I mean, don't you have anyone in the water department? There's still five people.
We do, and the charts were put up on the website, but I didn't have him. He was busy with some projects and reduced staffed himself.
No. So computer ease, okay. My friend Greg Burns. I see that he keeps couching his words, but he's not looking good as far as additional appropriations for our project or as our future potential project. It does give me a concern as to what the heck we're doing. We don't have a committee that we can talk about DCEL, but we got to talk about DCEL. And I'll tell you the truth, I don't know if we're really looking at 300 acre feet, supplemental, 600 acre feet. Is it? I don't have the detail. And I'm troubled by it because I've done project engineering for aerospace. I've done it for private industry. And I'd be scared to death of what we're looking for. The biggest project we've had so far is about $2.5 million. This is going to cost us some number. It just depends on whether we get this in-kind $3 million credit. But it could be $5 million. It could be, if it's a $20 million project, whatever. My statement to my fellow board members is this, that we have to define what, in fact, we want a project to be after we get this benchmark. If the benchmark, of course, doesn't come true, that is, that what's going to happen at Santa Rosa Creek, that's one thing. But what are we trying to get at the end of the day? I don't even know the size of, and I've looked at different pieces of literature, and I've also looked at places like Tampa Bay. I see what they've done, the mistakes they've done, 6-7 years of bankruptcies and failures and so forth, and we have one down at Carlsbad. We should know those projects like the back of our hand so that we don't make mistakes if, in fact, we do a project. And my hope is that we will do a project. But I don't have the feeling that I know if I can speak to someone in the community and tell them emphatically, if things work out at Santa Rosa Creek, this is what we plan to do.
Well, Director McKinnon, I think we can answer all of your questions right now, because those issues have been before this board on numerous occasions.
Absolutely.
At present, the size of the plant is 602 acre-feet per year. That's the capacity. That was explained to us by Mr. Gressens, our district engineer, on several occasions when the board had some workshops and public input and so forth on the desal plant. I think the plant size is also referenced in the Water Master Plan, if I'm not mistaken. That's number one. Number two, we have to go through a process to determine whether desal is even feasible. And that involves the geotechnical investigation that will occur in September and or October. We really need to take one step at a time. We really would be doing a disservice if we stepped out in front and started planning in a very specific way a desalination plant for a project that we don't even know is going to be feasible. So once the geotechnical investigation is finished, once the information comes back that it is feasible, then we can get on with the business of participating with the Corps in the specifics of the plant. We really can't do that now in advance of getting the geotechnical information.
You were in a board meeting when you said that, your project would be canceled. And I say this, I'm saying this, we should have this conversation together. And let me say,
we are going to have this conversation together.
300 acre feet is for the standard quality of life that we have now. When we have 600, and I see this in the Water Master Plan, 50% increase, so we have 18 units a period. Mm-hmm. Is this what we want? And I don't believe the cost that we have written. I do not believe that they're adequate, and they should be referenced almost continually by looking at what is happening in the other district. And you're saying that we don't know if we can do a desal plant. Well, there's 14,000 desal plants in this world at the present time.
Director McKinnon, the technology that we want to use is a technology that is rather unique in terms of desalination plants in California. The technology involves a subterranean ocean water intake system.
What if it doesn't come through?
Well, thank you for making my point.
Okay.
Then we have to double back and we have to consider whether or not we're going to go forward with desal and on what basis.
Mm-hmm.
So first we have to find out if the technology, the environmentally friendly technology that we want to use, is feasible. We have a very serious, as has been discussed at this board, we have a very serious geologic problem because the bedrock in this part of the coastline is very near the surface of the ocean floor.
Correct.
We are fortunate because we have, we believe, a couple of paleo channels that we can take advantage of where over geologic time, the path of Santa Rosa Creek has carved a V ditch in that bedrock. The important thing that we have to find out is what kind of material has been deposited in that V ditch. If it's all clay, that's very bad because clay is not permeable. If it's sand, seashells, and other material, then that may be good because that means that we can use those paleo channels for the kind of technology that we want to use. That is the point in this process that we're at.
Correct.
Now, the Corps of Engineers, which has built more projects than any of us can count, is
not D-cell.
Is satisfied. Well, if you'll give me a moment, I will explain how they intend to go about that. The Corps of Engineers is satisfied that this is the process that should be used. Take one step at a time and don't put the cart before the horse. With regard to the Corps' expertise with D-cell, the Corps has expressed to us as late as the meeting that we had on July the 19th that they intend to hire. The Corps is not going to physically design and build this project. As a matter of fact, the Corps of Engineers doesn't physically design and build anything. They manage, all right? The Corps proposes to retain an engineering firm and a construction firm that have experience with desalination projects. Specifically, they're looking at the engineering firm and the construction firm that either has completed or will soon complete the desalination plant at Sand City, which is on the Monterey Peninsula. So the Corps is aware of the fact that it doesn't have the expertise, but it's going to go out and get it.
Okay. Can I?
Director D'Amico, please.
Yes.
Clarify.
If the general manager would tell the fire chief to please reconsider his issues of fixtures and closets. In a storage closet, many people will see them. There are bulbs which have heavy glass covers and grills. So if there's a storage closet that has any inflammables or stuff, that's what's required. A bare fluorescent light or a fixture is not. So if you want, have somebody contact the code enforcement, the building inspector for the San Luis Obispo County before we tell people to go change something like that. Number two, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. We've told the community that the minutes are available either in recording at the office. Putting the well reports in this document, when you can go to the website.
That's probably the most important characteristic of this board.
Well, you should
we're a water company.
Well, we should look at it before we come to the meeting. I don't know that we need the meeting. But
no,
I'm just saying. Good. You tell people that they're going to get the minutes by looking at the tapes.
Well,
anyone in the community can get the well levels out of the website.
Absolutely.
Okay, but the most important thing. I am actually, my heart's racing. Valid points have been raised about the project. We are in July of 2010, and while I would counter for Mr. McKinnon that there is data everywhere necessary.
There is data. Sure.
But the reality is we're here today. I cannot produce a fact sheet or a project description, say 3 pages long, which truly identifies all the disparate elements that are in 9 million documents. And you cannot, Chairman
Greg.
You cannot parrot or say that we are not, we have no project, we don't know it is. Then why did this board, over the last 5 years or 6 years, spend probably at least $500,000, if not $1 million? We have these master plans, which we spent inordinate amounts of money, which I've always agreed that was the silliest thing in a for a town this size to spend that money, and say we don't have a project. We don't have a project yet, but we have to have a project plan. And Ms. McKinnon is exactly right. You do not go to a board, any board in any company, and say, I need $500,000, or I'm going to spend $700,000 of my federal money on a piece of an exploration, and they'll say, what for? Well, we think we're going to build a plant. Well, how big is it? Oh, it's 600 acre feet. Well, why are you building 600 acre feet? I mean, I've had that issue. It's also in three phases. The point is, we have to, and the community and the general, the people who attended the meeting at Rabobank, is there is a vacuum of information that has to be filled.
Well,
and if our engineer at this stage can't take, in 3 days, put together a four-page fact sheet which takes all the disparate information that he should have in his head by now and produce a document, then that he's not capable of doing it. I think he can do it. I've seen him do it for other projects. We should do it for this project. And the idea that we've engaged a construction manager, and that's what they are, no question about that, a construction manager, and we don't know exactly what we want to build, because I have had this discussion and have asked for workshops, or at least we can do it at this meeting. The public is here, and they'll listen to it. But I don't know that 600 acre feet is the right size. And we can talk about what was in the report, but as far as I'm concerned, people who decided that have been replaced. And I want to see why we're building 600 acre feet. I want to know what the disposition of the existing assets are going to be. And I think the public has a right to know. Millions of dollars have been spent in infrastructure on the wells. If the wells are being supplemented or supplanted, I don't know. There are detailed issues that have to be put together on a plain speaking 4 or 5 page question and answer or tables, and then we can discuss that if it need be. And from my perspective, I don't see how the Corps of Engineers can engage anybody unless they do the same thing. You don't engage a Black & Veatch or CH2M Hill and say, I want a plant. It's got to be desal. I realize, you know, I've been in the business. You do need to know what your influence characteristics are going to be and the ability to get it out. But my issue is, there is no issue of whether we'll build it. There is no issue whether we'll do an intake. Whether it's two wells, one wells, or four wells, we can get the water out of the ocean. We can build the plant. Technology, we will get it done. But the question is size, and then once we have the size, you need cost, operations cost, and then the impact on the ratepayer. And if we don't have a plan now, I cannot in conscience keep approving any expenditures of our money or the federal government's money, because it's our money too. I mean, I'm paying taxes like crazy to the federal government, to the state, and we pay rates here. So I have to disagree that if we cannot within the next 3 months or put together this information and have an open discussion, then we really have to have a real discussion about why we're proceeding on something that we don't have clarity on. And transparency means you can actually look through it. We don't want transparency. We want clarity. Clarity is what we need, and I don't have clarity. I mean, I have it in my mind because I've read the documents, and I think, but I disagree with some issues, and I could be outvoted. I have no problem being outvoted, but I want to get that discussion on the table.
Well, why projects fail? Projects fail because they don't have resources, and I'm beginning to realize our ability to create the necessary fiscal end of things is very scary at this point in time. Number two, milestones are missed. We had a milestone that was January, maybe let's even say February. It's now July, walking into August, and we still don't have what I would consider, if we look at the broad scope of this project, this credit, $3 million credit, is still somewhere in Washington, bouncing between Washington, L.A., and so forth. Greg, I understand you're very knowledgeable of that process and you're accepting of it, but as a businessman, I don't accept it. I want to see that money. It's where is the money? And it's very, very important that we have some of these things are nailed down. And the one thing I understand, it's supplemental. But when we say supplemental, what does that mean? Do we just close this off for and just open it up maybe 2 years from now, 3 years from now, for 180 days? Or, like any of the other desal plants that are being operated, they're functioning every day.
Yeah. One of the problems that we have is, I guess, for lack of a better description, continuity of information from one board to the next.
Sure.
And in previous board meetings, before you were elected, this information was thoroughly discussed, I can assure you. Now, having said that, I understand the frustration, and I think it's incumbent upon us, now that you've raised the issue, to get all of this information into a distilled format so that it's all on one or two pages, and you know, we'll have it there for everybody to see. I suspect that after having gone through that, it will be apparent that we're not in a position yet to make some of these critical decisions, because a lot of what is still up in the air in terms of financing, for example, revolves around the efficacy of the technology that we want to use. We could save a lot of money and a lot of time if we just put an open ocean water intake system out there, a simple pipe to suck in the water, take it to the desal plant, do the reverse osmosis, and have the supplemental water that we need. I suggest to you that we would never in a million years get that through the regulatory process. Impossible. It will never get past the Coastal Commission. We have got to resort to a technology that minimizes the entrainment and entrapment of ocean life, and that's what this is all about. That's why at the Coastal Commission meeting, we heard nothing but praise from the staff of the Coastal Commission, and that was on the Coastal Commission's website, free to look at the video of that meeting. We got nothing but praise for the process that we're using. We've got not only our own process, we've got the Corps of Engineers process, and we've got the state regulatory process that we have to follow. So we're trying to navigate through all of that as carefully as we can, and I would submit to you that we're meeting with a lot of success now. We're on the right path. It's frustrating at times. It's maddening dealing with the Corps of Engineers and with the bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. I do understand that bureaucracy, but that doesn't mean that I'm accepting of it. I don't accept it. It is so bad that the local L.A. District Office staff of the Corps of Engineers is embarrassed. They're embarrassed at the failure of their own agency to get this integral determination report approved. It's abominable. The Water Resources Development Act that authorized the $3 million credit was passed, two or three years ago. And yeah, Here we are on the cusp of the Corps of Engineers going out and doing the geotechnical investigation, and that integral determination report is not yet finished. It's inexcusable. It's like a Shakespearean or a Greek tragedy. It's where, you know, man is not in control of his fate. You know, we are somewhat at the mercy, in terms of this IDR process, at the mercy of the Corps of Engineers. And we are trying everything we can to move this through the Corps process as quickly as possible. And I will tell you, Director McKinnon, I have made many trips to Washington, D.C. on my own time, costing me personally a whole lot of income pushing this thing through. And quite frankly, I don't see other board members doing the same thing. So if you want to participate in the process and you want to see what it's all about, go back to Washington, D.C. and have at it. It is not easy.
No, thank you.
All right. Okay. Well, I've been there, and I've done that. Okay? Now, I'm not done yet.
Yeah, I know. You're going. I'm
on a roll here. You bet I am. I understand, Director D'Amico, what you're saying about the need to pull all of this information together. We will do that. But the fact remains that we're the captive right now of the kind of technology that has got us to the point we're at now, which is clearance by the Coastal Commission with a whole lot of praise for stepping up, doing the right thing in terms of the process we're following and the substance that we're following in terms of the kind of technology we want to use. And unless and until that technology proves out through the geotechnical investigation, there's not a whole lot that we can do.
I've heard this for a bunch of meetings, but I'm not saying that what we get that day is what's going to be built. But I cannot continue to go forward if I don't know exactly what we're going to build based on, and I'm 100%. I don't know if you were trying to say anything with that comments, but the ocean intakes, the well intakes are, yeah, you're not going to get an ocean intake. So the well intakes, like I said, whether we need 1, 3, or 4, whether they're 20 feet deep or 80 feet deep, I mean, that'll all come out of the study. The process will be what it needs to be. But right now, the best information available, which you've hung your hat on, or we have, the board has, the community has, is what's in the master plan. So a technology that can be costed, but there are and if all of those numbers are put together, and there's still discussions on whether it's 602 or 405, as far as I'm concerned, so that we don't overbuild. The other item is that we throw in $3 million for solar as if it's, you know, chump change. That's a lot of money. That's like $300,000 a year in new rates that we'd have to raise to put the solar on. You're not saving $300,000 worth of electric costs. So, and if people want to do it, I think my point is I want to show the people of the community that we're going to pay this kind of money. We can amortize it against our cost per kilowatt hour, and if you're willing to pay twice as much per kilowatt hour as you are now, that's fine. Somebody has to decide that. And a 218 process, by the way, in the future will be the vote on whether it goes ahead or not. But the issue of the plant size, the timing, and then knowing what we're at least at this point. We have to know what we are, and I don't see it easily found.
Excuse me, President Sanders, given the fact that this discussion is flowing from the report by Mr. Burns, it might be appropriate to direct that a future agenda item have a something more specific to allow for a fuller discussion regarding this.
Thank you. Let me suggest that we can pull together on a sheet or two of paper what we know to date. We know what the preliminary construction cost estimate is. Mm-hmm. We know what the components are. It's all been discussed here at this board mm-hmm. with these members. Mm-hmm. We know what technology we want to use. What the technology is that we want to use. Mm-hmm. So to the degree that we have information, we can pull it all together. It will be much the same as the information that was imparted by Colonel Magnus when he was here in December. So it'll be pretty much a Xerox copy of his report, but we can pull it together. In terms of financing the plant, there is a strong likelihood that we can finance this plant even without federal assistance and not impact the ratepayers. And I think all of these board, all of us board members know where that money would come from. It would come from connection fees. It can be done. It is feasible. But I think it's a mistake to start the discussion now about rate increases and other financial aspects until we know whether or not the technology is going to work, because the cost largely revolves around the technology.
You said before the conversation starts, there's a conversation going on, and it's ramping up. It's about desal. It's out on the street.
And yes, it is.
A vacuum in this world is very, very difficult to maintain. It usually and most often gets filled up very quickly. And I think it's getting filled up in the case of the reverse osmosis system that we're looking at versus the word desal has seemed like a negative when you say desal. It's a data that isn't accurate.
And what's not accurate?
The data that is out on the street that says what it's going to cost. We have no way of knowing the cost, and it's going to be a tremendous increase in our rate structure.
Well, Director McKinnon, we have time and again advertised that the present construction cost estimate is $20 million. That number has been repeated time and time again at this board.
Many numbers.
There's not a lot that you can do about the rumor mill except combat it with facts.
Combat it with facts. Exactly.
And
we have
advertised the fact that it is about a $20 million project.
I've heard $20 million. I've heard 17.
Yes.
I've heard 14.
Well, it's 17.
I've heard 14 plus 3.
It's 17 plus a solar energy component.
Correct.
There is, with respect to the capacity of the plant, with respect to a whole lot of specifics about the plant, there's nothing that's locked in concrete. We can't lock any of this in concrete. We're subject to a whole lot of laws going forward, not the least of which is the California Environmental Quality Act, that is going to require, as we've discussed at this board before, is going to require that we analyze the environmental impacts associated with this project.
Yeah,
that includes the growth-inducing aspects of this project. That is, for example, why we have a build-out reduction program.
Well, I understand.
The solar component is not just to save money on electricity. The law now requires that we analyze greenhouse gas emissions. Like it or not, we have to do that. And when you talk about electrical consumption, you get directly into the greenhouse gas emission issue. You have to show under the California Environmental Quality Act, in your environmental impact report, how you propose to deal with greenhouse gas emissions. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons we have a solar component. I could go on and on.
Yeah.
I think it is unfair, grossly unfair, to say that the information, such as we know it, about this plant has not been advertised. It has.
It has been advertised over and over again.
Yes,
it has. I agree with that. We need to have a composite, as we've just talked, so that we can just present it in the light of 2010.
We'll have a composite.
1999.
We will have a composite.
And whether we need it at this, the sheets, which is good, we can get that together and whenever you think you can add. But the other thing that I cannot take, I appreciate your opinions. The means of financing, if again in the corporate environment, I would get that advice from my chief financial officer who floats bonds and knows how to finance things. And if you have information, if you have some evidence that somehow connection fees are going to pay for all of this? Because in 12 states of the United States that I ran utilities, you cannot take a basic services facility like our treatment plant and actually only get it paid on new customers. The relative cost has to be spread over the entire rate base. So unless there's someone that has some understanding that we can charge, whether it's 25, 35, I hear these numbers thrown out. Again, kind of verbalizations. I don't see it anywhere in any document. But you cannot just say everybody, like the Unlock group, they're going to come up with $5 million. That just doesn't work. First of all, I doubt that they're going to come up with $5 million in cash. But somewhere along the line, somebody's going to have to put money together.
They've offered $2.5 million in cash.
Well, then you have to set up a special. I mean, it sounds nice.
I understand.
But there's, you know, you'd have to set up a special service district to accept. I mean, how do you? My point is, it shouldn't be only in one person's head, in one person's knowledge. It should be common knowledge for, as far as I'm concerned, all the board members. And I've never seen anything on the financing side of the business.
I am only offering a suggestion, Director D'Amico. I'm not carrying around any proprietary or secret information.
I know that. I'm trying to get that out.
We will have a summary of what we know about the specifics of the desal plant published for the next agenda.
I think that's too quick.
Too quick.
That's too quick, Greg.
Let me
say what I keep hearing here is we have a lot of information. I think we can boil it down into from the engineering standpoint as to what the past has shown. I also hear that maybe at least one or two of the directors would like to have a chance to question whether that pass is the right number, the 602, whether that's the right number. And that's a legitimate discussion that we can have. But I think what we ought to do is say maybe a meeting 3 months from now, an open kind of a workshop type of a meeting that says, here's what we have from an engineering standpoint, here's what we have from a finance area standpoint, here's what the background has been. We can distill that down fairly easily, I think. Mm-hmm. And then that can lead to a discussion that says, do you want to think in terms of what is the plan going to be to a 300, 600? I think in the water master plan they use 300, 600, 900.
900, yeah.
So I think what I hear you saying is I want to know what we're going to build.
And why.
Why we're building that.
I want to make it sure, President Sanders, that we have conflict, and I think the conflict is positive. I certainly respect the previous board, Peter, yourself, and Merle, what you've done. What I want to make sure is, this is 2010 walking into 2011. Let us just distill this. We have a lot of negative energy out there that we have to address and simply say, hey, here's our plan. It's like, believe it or not, there was a plan like that was established for the Apollo program, which I was part of. We'd have still been thinking, how are we going to get to the moon now if we didn't have some really hard numbers that we had to change along the way? But we started off with, here's the picture of what it's going to be. There's no attack here. All I want to do is just make sure that we look at why we're doing it again, what is it going to cost the community, what's the benefits of this project, and how wonderful this legacy. I've said this in public session. This is going to be our legacy, whether we like it or not.
We don't know what it's going to cost the community because we don't know what the technology is, number one, and we don't know how much we're going to get in terms of appropriations from the federal government. Right now, we have $2.1 million of stimulus money hanging in the balance, which we've all discussed here.
Correct.
And we are hoping that that money will still be there when the integral determination report is finished. But going forward, we're into the great unknown in terms of how much we're going to get in terms of federal assistance, particularly in light of the federal budget deficits and the perceived need on the part of Congress to tighten up on the purse strings.
Yeah.
So I don't know how we can have a meaningful discussion on financing at this particular point in time. However, having heard the suggestion about 90 days from now having some sort of a workshop on this issue, I think it's terrific. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, and by then we'll certainly know whether the ARA funds are still valid. We'll know if we're going to get that $300 million.
We'll know whether
credit.
The technology is going to work.
All that.
Yeah. That's correct.
So I think that 3 months is excellent.
I think we'll have some general information by that point in time to where we can say, here's what the plan has been or what we've put together in the past. Do we want to stay with it? If we do, then we'll put that picture together that you're talking about.
Exactly.
You know, and then, and granted, we can't know the exact finances on it, or you can have some idea. At least a starting point, and if we have some idea, I get the opinion you want a better, clearer idea of where we're going. What is it going to look like if everything comes out the way we want it to be?
That's what you can do today.
Yeah, then all right. And that's fine. But I think at a 3 month period of time, we can direct our staff to have the engineering aspects of all the stuff we have now. We can do a little research on the whys and wherefore that's in the master plan. We can all inform us, go back and look at it again ourselves, and then be ready to sit down and battle a little bit and come up with what we want. And that might be that argument about whether 50% or 20% or 30% or on quality of life issues and all that kind of stuff could be either, looked at again or verified or say where we're going to go.
Okay. All right. Any more questions of the general manager? I have.
She did.
Absolutely. I have two requests to speak. The first is from Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I'm Elizabeth Bentenhausen, a full-time resident of Cambria. I want to make four, I hope, very quick points so I don't take up my 3 minutes all. Number one, board, I would be very happy to send you the minutes of the August 2003 meeting, back when they were exhaustive minutes before the second to the last shutdown. It answers in specificity because it gives the board action that decided to move from 12 to 18 units, and that as the basis for the 600 acre feet supplement from the desal plant. So I've got that at home. I'll just forward it to you by email if I may. And I want to say again that that specificity of policy setting by the board and the debate that led up to it is extremely helpful, because I don't think I could get a hold of that video, but maybe I could if I really wanted to. I want to say, though, that there was no public comment whatsoever on that board action, because public comment came before any motions were made. That motion came up all of a sudden, and the public had no opportunity to comment on it at all in that meeting. My second point is that when Colonel Magnus came to us in December in all his glory, and quoted all those statistics, if you read the footnotes on the Army Corps of Engineers budget report there, you will see that they got all those numbers from the CCSD. It was not a separate itemization or anything at all from Army Corps of Engineers. So the Army Corps of Engineers is relying on CCSD. So I look forward to this maybe 3 months. Director Cliff, that's your favorite time span, basically, for saying, why don't we get this done in 3 months? I look forward to it a lot, because if I'm volunteering in second grade and somebody says, you can add 5 plus 1 and get 6, and you can add 4 plus 2 and get 6, et cetera, you all know this. The specificity of the numbers is extremely important, especially if you're cutting up a chocolate chip cookie then and you want to get a piece. So I urge you to tell us, public, how in the world did CCSD arrive at 20 point whatever million? Not just gross numbers. I want to know, how much is the new technology going to cost us? Or if we have to go back, how much will the regular osmosis directly from the Pacific Ocean cost us? Number three, President Sanders, I really want clarification here of something that you said so that I don't misrepresent in public out in the street. I understood you to say that we received praise from the Coastal Commission for the process and the substance of the technology that we're proposing. Is that, but did I understand that you're proposing with the wells instead of the reverse osmosis? Is that?
That's accurate, specifically yes. From Peter Douglas, the executive director.
Yes, I will go back and look at the video of that and also the papers. But when I heard him say that, I heard nothing from him about testing for environmental impact. Rather, he was saying it's the wells are preferable to reverse osmosis directly drawing from the ocean environmentally, but that he did not say that he was not praising us for discovering something that had no environmental impact.
To paraphrase him, he said that if desal is going to be done in California, it should be done the way we propose to do it.
Oh, but that was not a comment about whether it had environmental impact or not. It was just comparatively speaking with regard to the other reverse osmosis possibility.
My quote you related back to me had to do with that comment.
Thank you. Because then I saw it twice when I watched. And then I have my fourth comment. As you know, President Sanders and General Manager Rudock, I emailed you a question back in June, and then Mr. Sanders, I received back in a couple of weeks ago, I received your response saying that you would check with the Army Corps of Engineers. My question to you was, in the quarterly report for the first 3 months of this year, the Army Corps of Engineers reported, according to their report, expenses through 4/30/09. My question to you was whether you have an update of the past year's expenses.
We think it is a typographical error, and we're waiting for an answer from the Corps.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so we might have a correction then. I assume that next month the second quarterly report for 2010 will appear before us, and we can check to see whether that's addressed. The final comment then, as you wait for that kind of clarity on numbers from the Army Corps of Engineers, I wish you exceeding good luck. I have just finished reading a book called The Swamp. I want to say publicly that I was totally and completely ignorant of the history of Florida. I didn't know diddly squat about it. Now I do. And I know about what Michael Grunewald, who wrote the book, calls the politics of paradise. And there you have a wonderful description of how the Army Corps of Engineers, in the second half of the book, played the development and engineering game over against the well-being of the Everglades. And now you can go every day, if you use internet, to the websites that update you on, pardon my language, what a sad, shitty situation the Everglades are in. And I won't say anything more about that because I'm sure you want to go check this out. And all the details of the Army Corps of Engineers, Mr. D'Amico, you will find right there in that book. And I'll talk to you about that book thoroughly after you've read it. Thank you very much.
Director D'Amico.
Yeah, I'd like to address that. Look, I will tell you, in now 40 years of engineering and a lot of study,
Are you speaking of yours or theirs? Okay, thank you, sir.
I want to point out that there are individuals in every organization who make very bad mistakes. But an organization of the Corps of Engineers is an amazingly competent and group of people. Now, what they did, you remember something. The Corps of Engineers works. It's the United States Corps of Engineers. They work at the behest of our political organizations. Yeah. What they did in Louisiana, what they did in Florida, what they did is directed by our government agencies. The people and developers in Florida, which were run by cities, elected officials, developers, sanctioned by senators, congressmen, all the way up to the president, because he is the commander in chief, whoever that president might have been. So the idea that these, the Grunewalds and the rest, talk about these disastrous consequences of the Corps' work is one thing.
No, but he's describing exactly what you just said.
Yes, but my point is they are people who are directed by the people who they work for, and those people work for the developers. So my point is don't shoot this messenger because he brings you a message of dire consequences. The Corps functions at the behest of the government. The book should be written as an indictment, if you will, of the congressmen, the senators, and the developers in the cities who caused this.
Yeah.
Right. But then, no, but everybody comes in and says as if, look at those Corps, they're evil people.
No,
are hardworking, well-trained people. They're magnificent engineers. Yeah. I worked on them in Puerto Rico when they built dam projects. Now, and you will get environmentalists who say, why did you dam up that great river in a rainforest in Rio de la Plata, Florida?
I'm not disagreeing with that analysis at all.
No, I just want to clarify that.
The swamp is a comprehensive analysis of 200 years of history in Florida and how this happened. But I want to underline what you just said. The Army Corps of Engineers follows the, among many other things, but certainly follows the instruction from the government at whatever level. Now, my question is, since you have given up the environmental review of what's going to happen down on the beach, how are you, as the government locally, as a utility government, going to instruct the Army Corps of Engineers?
Let me just add to what Director D'Amico said, since we're kind of on a philosophical roll here. Director D'Amico is absolutely right. The Corps of Engineers does not sit around and dream up projects to destroy the environment. In fact, they don't dream up projects at all. The Corps of Engineers reacts to what Congress and the administration tell them to do. So it's easy to use the Corps of Engineers as a convenient whipping boy, but I think it's grossly unfair. In fact, there are projects that the Corps has been forced to build over the loud objections of the Corps of Engineers. The Tennessee Tom Bigbee Waterway is one of them. The Corps called it a huge, unnecessary boondoggle. They had to build it. They were told to build it. They do what Congress and the administration tell them to do, number one. Number two, something that I've watched over, going back to 1973 when I first began watching the Corps of Engineers in a specific project that they were doing in Southern California, The environmental ethics within the Corps has changed dramatically. And you heard Colonel Magnus promptly speak up after I introduced him to remind me that I had forgotten one of the degrees that he has, and it's in environmental engineering, I think from Texas A&M University. The focus, you would be very surprised at the focus of the Corps of Engineers on the environment. They're not stupid. They get it. And so, again, I think it's very unfair to use the Corps as a whipping boy. Sure, the Corps has made mistakes. We've all made mistakes. But to suggest that somehow the drilling on the beach is going to wind up as some sort of environmental disaster like we have in the Gulf of Mexico, which has been alleged by some, I think is just a patent disservice to the people of this community. The second request to speak is from Jeff Hellman.
Jeff Hellman, I'm a full-time resident in Cambria. I got just a couple of comments to make. One is,
The figure for the acre feet that you're going to build is 602 instead of 600. Does this not allow you then to build a third 300 acre foot desal plant or put another module on it, which would lead to even more potential growth in our town here? Why the 602 instead of 600? Is that like a tricky loophole so that expansion can go further? That's one. The first item, the only other item I want to mention is regarding the Coastal Commission and their, exuberance over, our project and everything. I was reading somewhere, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the Coastal Commission never received reports from a bunch of agencies, including the Fish and Game and other agencies, that were actually critical of some of the things that were being done. In other words, their staff failed to give them letters that were written by various other governmental agencies that had their questions about the project. That's it.
Let me answer your first or your last question first. Some of the reports that you refer to from other governmental agencies are referred to in the Coastal Commission staff report to the commission.
I was reading somewhere where the staff neglected to give the actual commissioners who voted on the go-ahead those letters from, for example, Fish and Game.
Once again, some of those reports that you refer to were referred to in the staff report rendered by the Coastal Commission staff to the commission. To say that those reports were not a part of the Coastal Commission process is patently untrue. Okay, now to get to your first question regarding the size of the desalination plant.
Well, the 602, why the 2? Does it set us up for another module?
That's how the math worked out.
But doesn't that, my question was, does that, if they do these in 300-acre-foot modules, wouldn't that going over the 600 limit
reverse osmosis plants in 300-acre-feet modules. They have what they call trains that are units of reverse osmosis units that can be connected together to increase or decrease the size of the plant. The concern about growth has been addressed in the Water Master Plan Environmental Impact Report. There's a section in the Environmental Impact Report dealing with the growth-inducing impacts of all of the things in the Water Master Plan, including the proposed desalination facility. If you read that section, it discusses Cambria's build-out reduction program and the fact that growth is capped at 4,650 units. That is a legally enforceable mitigation measure that was adopted as a part of the EIR. And so if the board or any subsequent board attempts to breach that 4,650-unit cap, a lawsuit can ensue, and a judge will stop whatever is going on that would permit that cap to be increased.
I don't have quite as much faith in this as you do, I suppose, insofar as it seems like what people want to do, they just seem to be able to take the law, bend it, and stretch it, and then do what they want. Well, I think it's the person's intentions that are important and not some of the legal jargon or stuff that they put on the paper.
I guess we come from a different perspective. I have a lot of faith in the law.
And this is further on, this is not appropriate for this time.
Thank you.
Thank you for the time.
Appreciate it. Okay, any other comments on the general manager's report? If not, we'll move on to the consent agenda, and we'll begin with item 7B, which has been pulled at the request of Director McKinnon. 7B is the approval of expenditures for the month of June 2010. Director McKinnon.
Just one, and it's regarding Innovative Concepts and Tech Express. Page 17 and 20. 17 for Innovation Concepts, middle of the page, and middle of the page for Tech Express. Only the fact that I don't understand it says administrative server equipment and mid tech support for server replacement, perhaps. What is the $20,000 for? Could you just explain it ever so briefly?
Server replacement. Two of them failed.
Two of them failed. So
one of them failed. One of them was at 98% capacity, as we discussed, because
I shared
this with you. And the other one was in the upper 90s. So we replaced, actually, and then another server was near expiration of warranty. So we took four servers out and replaced them with three brand new servers. That's Tech Express. That's not all of those costs. It was roughly about $23,000 for the replacement of those three servers, brand new servers. It's hardware and services for installation and transition and reformatting and reprogramming and all the licensure that's responsible for all the users and the software programs on that.
Now, did they also require, like, their own desired firewall and so on?
No.
Some of the
additional,
or we can keep for guidance in looking?
Yes. As soon as they get through the server transition and we get through all of the transition for the maintenance.
Are they also going to be advising us what to do with SCADA?
Yes, they will help us with that.
Okay.
They have that technical competence to do that.
Any idea when?
No, that would probably be number three on the list. The server transition is still, we're pretty much through with getting information and data transferred, but there's programming issues going on that we're completing, and then the service tech is next, and that's just making sure we have all the components, the hardware components identified for their maintenance contract.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other issues on that item, Director McKinnon?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is there a motion to approve item 7B?
So moved.
Second.
Can I speak to this, sir?
Oh, yes, you may. Mr. McKinnon? Absolutely. Sorry about that. Just don't drink the caffeinated kind.
Oh, no, never. Jerry McKinnon, a Cambria resident. As you are aware from previous meetings, my primary concern is the health of this building. Now, from what I understand, this building is included in a section called Facilities and Resources. When I look at facilities and resources in the itemized expenditure report, I only see Vets Hall mentioned a couple of times. However, a total of $14,194 was spent on facility and resource items. That's my rough going through the figures as we sit and listen to other things. Of that $14,000, $12,527 went for machinery. Now, that machinery, I think, is probably being used on the upkeep of the resources around. It includes such things as a dump trailer for $4,972. The pickup of rodeo grounds debris for $4,980. $1,450 for PG&E bills for the electricity that's going up and down Main Street. There are just a variety of things that are going in various places, but so far as the Vets Hall is concerned, $270 is spent on paper products. Now, those paper products go to take care of the public restrooms as well, I'm sure. Now, when I look around this building and see the parking lot and try to park on this parking lot at night, you don't find any parking spaces marked out. They're all obliterated in the night. There's no white stripes. That's a part of the maintenance and the keep up and the safety factor of this building. Now, if we can do all these other things under facilities and resources, perhaps we could concentrate a bit on other things as well as doing the things on ranch sites and so forth. And when I consider the ranch sites, I also see another section called Parks and Recreation. Now, I do not understand why some of the expense that's going to take care of the Fiscalini Ranch or the rodeo grounds for those areas that would become a part of parks and recreation is charged against facility and resources. Every time we take a dime out of facilities and resources budget, that means there are fewer dollars that we can expend on other items that are just as important. So I would suggest that we take some modification as to what facilities and resources really means, especially when we look at the diamond in Cambria. As you drive down Main Street, this building is a shining diamond to anyone who visits. It's at the heart of our community. It should be as spit and polished as you can make any building, because it's dedicated to the men who gave their lives for our country. And to allow it to deteriorate and to allow it to look like a second-class building is not doing honor and justice to the community, to those men, and to the people who paid their tax money to support the operation of this building. So please give it some serious consideration. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. We have a motion and a second on the floor to approve item 7B, which is approval of expenditures for the month of June 2010. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
I'd also like to commend SEIU and the general manager for their work together to join in on the give back on the retirement funds. That now makes all employees, to some extent, all new employees now will be paying their share of the retirement plan.
Thank you. I'll
okay.
let them know that too.
Yes. That's well spoken. Thank you. That takes us to item 8, hearings and appeals. Item 8A is to conduct a public hearing on parcels subject to clearing under the CCSD's fire hazard fuel reduction contract, to consider adoption of Resolution 35-2010 confirming the fire hazard fuel reduction itemized report, and to direct staff to submit parcel numbers and charges to the San Luis Obispo County Tax Collector's Office. Madam General Manager, is there a report?
Yes, thank you. I did want to mention, I apologize for not doing so. The district clerk confirmed with AGP video today that they're having digital scanning problems, and that's the reason why you don't see us on the overhead. And I don't know if that means we're going to have a video of this meeting. We may just have the audio. But anyway, I just wanted to let you know that that's occurred, and that's why you don't see us up there. Thank you for bringing it to my attention, Director D'Amico. Okay, she just tells me we will have video for the
yes,
final production.
We will have video. We okay. just have a problem with the box that puts the projector up
okay.
there.
So thank okay. you. I appreciate
thank you.
That. And thanks for bringing it to my attention. I get in a zone, and sometimes I don't pay attention to the screen. All right, so item 8A, the fiscal impact this year for the fire hazard fuel reduction. You'll see there that there were 83 parcels that were fuel reduced this year by the CCSD's contractor. Some were very large, overgrown, had a lot of fuel modification and carry-off or debris removal. The contractor was Mike Rice, and the board approved. Now, let me make a couple of changes or corrections on page 37, as I said to you whenever this package was delivered. You'll notice on the itemized list that starts on page 41, and or it's on page 41 and 42, there were two parcels that at the time the list was produced for early publication of the agenda, he had not completed, okay? So he got those finished this week. So let me reference page 41, and that first asterisk lot is the APN. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Number 6 down, it's 022.093.019, and we had an estimate of $50. The cost was $434. So that's the contractor cost. That changes the total, of course. And then go down now about another 7 or 8 down to 023. It's the only other asterisk one on there. 023.065.014. We had an estimated cost of $132. The actual cost was $562. So if you turn to page 42 and go down to the bottom of the column, the contractor cost, I'd like to correct that amount. It was $32,217.50. The correct amount with those asterisk amounts now in is $33,031.50. And then if you go over to the grand total, when you add the admin fees, The number was $65,549.50. The new number is $66,231.50. that was pretty good to just have those two lots remaining, and we appreciate his work. Okay, so this itemized report provides those detailed costs that the property owner is subject to those charges, and that was to remove all of those downfields and vegetation. It includes in the separate column the CCSD's admin charge, and this includes for our inspections, follow-up, the management and administrative work that we have to do in coordinating to get this data to San Luis Obispo County in today's time. And we have the resolution that's attached to that's in compliance with the legal review and has that attached itemized list as its Exhibit A. And it will be with the corrected amounts in there. So that's all I have to report.
Any questions of the general manager? Director Clift.
Yeah. Just for clarification purposes, the $400 administrative fees, if these people cleaned their own lots, we wouldn't even be involved, right?
That's exactly right.
Is there any way, I mean, because we're using our time
and equipment
and things like that, is there any way that during the maybe the course of the year in some downtime, which I know you have a lot of, anyhow, is there some way that we can kind of, obviously it's been reduced by a lot of people. Is there some way that we can convince a lot of these people that they're just wasting money by not? Or should we double the fee because we reduced a whole lot of people off the list?
I appreciate you bringing that up. It was at 200.
Yeah, I know we doubled the fee and it reduced the number.
To be a nexus with the fee? I mean, it is a true user fee.
Yeah.
And what happened is when this was evaluated and developed, we had a consultant come in here and literally walk. I think about the phone calls that will be generated as a result of that, and the limited staff we have to deal with them.
Yeah.
So I'll consider that. It's part of the program.
Yeah, and secondary would be if that doesn't work to reduce us down of us being babysitters for people, maybe we ought to.
I got to admit to you, there are some on this list that they do this every year because it's cheaper for them than to come over here or to take the time if they don't live here, and it's just easier for them to have us do it. And I tend to agree with you that the property is the property owner's responsibility, but, you know.
It would seem to me it'd be easier for them to just be under an annual contract with one of these guys to do it, if they're going to have to do it every year anyhow. Anyhow.
Okay, thank you. I will share that with the fire chief. We'll discuss that.
Just one more question. How many do, in fact, pay versus it becomes a lien on their property?
You know, that's a good question, but, you know, since the CCSD is in the Twitter program, you know, we receive property taxes no matter whether people pay them or not. We haven't done the research to go back.
No,
I am aware of a couple who refuse to pay the admin fee, and one of them is Mr. Bird. And there is another one. But, you know, eventually that is handled by the county, and fortunately for us, we don't have to get involved.
We get our
property taxes no matter what.
Yeah.
So it will be, again, on that list to do.
Yeah. Rice could call them. He could have this list and call them rather than.
Absolutely. Anybody could. Any vendor.
Idea.
It's
yeah.
public information.
Yeah. Absolutely. So. Director Shaldekar.
Yeah, I noticed that the estimate and the actual were quite different in both cases. Is that typical or is it just a
That was Tammy and Corey sitting there going, I need this finished so that I can publish this agenda on Friday. So
yeah,
I didn't have
just,
to hear Mr. McKinnon tell me that it wasn't
number.
Complete, okay? So we just guesstimated and tried to use numbers based on what she had from what we thought could be.
So. Any other questions of the general manager before we open the public hearing? If not, the public hearing is open. I have one request to speak from Amanda Rice. Oh, here comes another one.
Thank you, President Sanders, board. I just have a couple of points. One first thing, disclaimer: I'm not an accountant, and my degree is in English. I know how to work with numbers, but I don't know some of the specifics about the way that you do things. Ms. Rudock said that the consultant came in and watched the process of going through the process of what has to be done on the admin side that causes it to be the $400. I've always thought that it seems like, well, one is $400 every single one costs $400? Or because you're doing 30 of them, by the time you get to the 30th one, it doesn't necessarily take you as long? And maybe that a better, more fair way to do the admin fee would be to take the total cost that it actually costs the overhead and split it by the number of lots that had to be administered. Like I said, I don't know if that's accounting that one way or the other is preferable. There were 23 that all 3 years, 8, 9, and 10, were fined and had to be cleared. 23 lots that happened on every single list. 9 of those, the admin fee was less than the cost to clear the property. So 14 of the ones that are habitual offenders, if you will, 14 of them paid less to have the lot cleared than they paid in admin fee. It's good that it's down to 83 this year. If you look at the total number, there were 53 that cost less than the admin fee to clear, and there were 30 that cost more than the admin fee. So I think that whether if you change the fee, you might want to look at whether you do it from bottom up or top down, because the number of lots that you have to deal with does make a difference, I think. Thank you.
Sounds reasonable. Thank you. The next request to speak is from Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
My compliments to Ms. Rice on her numbers just now. Just a suggestion that you might want to consider within the next 3 months or so. If there were 28 owners who didn't do it this year, who didn't do it last year, who didn't do it the year before, why don't you add another column? You always have the same administration fee of $400. That can be simple. But why not add a column for fines? The first year, there is no fine. But the second year, if you didn't do it last year, you must pay, say, a fine of $500. If you go 3 years in a row, a fine of maybe $750. So it's just a possibility that you might want to look at to have an impetus for the moral suasion that you were talking about, and also not have to do a...
Second. Moved and seconded to direct staff to submit the parcel numbers and charges for the fire hazard fuel reduction program to the San Luis Obispo County Tax Collector's Office. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. There is no regular business for this agenda. That takes us to the last public comment period. I have no request to speak. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to address the board on an item that is not on the agenda? Seeing no one, we are adjourned to closed session.